I would like to also thank my dad, my mom, because they've been great parents, and all my sisters and the support. And this is the crowd. Of course, I had to thank you guys. You guys were just, you were great.
Ladies and gentlemen, the 1999 U.S. Open Women's Singles Champion, Serena Williams.
Since her first Grand Slam title at the 1999 U.S. Open, when she was 17 years old, Serena Williams has been one of the most dominant tennis players in the history of the sport. She claimed an open-era record of 23 Grand Slam singles titles, spent 319 weeks as the number one player in the world, and became undoubtedly the greatest women's tennis player the sport has known. Earlier this month, after 27 years on tour, Serena Williams announced her plan to retire after the U.S. Open, or as she put it, she's evolving away from tennis. She spoke about that in Meghan Markle's new podcast, Archetypes.
I don't like the word retirement because it has like, I don't like it for me in this scenario because I will never retire from something that you absolutely love. I will always have some sort of involvement in it. It won't be professionally, but I will always want to be involved in some way, shape, or form in tennis.
Serena Williams has been a professional tennis player since she was 14 and started playing the sport at the age of 4. And while she's been involved in business, fashion, and so much already during her career, this evolution will mark a new chapter.
Honestly, I can't wait to wake up one day and literally never have to worry about performing on such a high level and, you know, competing. And I've actually never felt that. I mean, I've had a baby and I stopped and I've had injuries, but there was always somewhere in the back of my mind that it's still a possibility. So for it to just be completely gone is it's new territory for me.
So when you've dedicated every waking day to a sport, what does it look like to evolve and pursue meaning or greatness when your first career is behind you? I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. Today on Point, we'll discuss how athletes are redefining retirement, a phrase we're borrowing from sports columnist Bill Roden. And Bill Roden joins us now. He's editor-at-large for the sports and culture site Andscape. He's also the author of $40 Million Slaves, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Black Athlete. And earlier this month, he wrote a column titled Serena Williams is Set to Redefine Retirement. Bill, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Kimberly, how are you doing?
I am good. Thanks for joining us today. So what will you remember most when you think about Serena Williams?
Oh, wow. So many things. Just her championship medal. I think that she is one of the most dominating athletes. I mean, I've been doing this for pay for about 40 years. And Serena Williams is almost by far is my top five of just absolutely tremendous competitors. I'll just always remember her championship medal. And specifically, yeah, so I'll remember that. I'll remember this, the championship medal.
And I just want to talk about Serena Williams, the athlete, just a little bit more before we talk about the evolution. And I know it's hard, and you know, as a sports columnist, it's terribly hard to compare athletes. Mm-hmm. And I've been lucky enough to see some greats perform, you know, in person, Michael Jordan, you know, Pedro Martinez on the mound at Fenway mm-hmm. Park. There was nothing like seeing Serena Williams at the U.S. Open. She seemed to defy gravity and physics. I mean, just talk about her as a dominating athlete.
Yeah, I think and I think you have to put the thing, the aspect of gender there, too, because mm-hmm. Serena really liberated women athletes that you could be a sweat getter. You could be aggressive. You could tear your opponent apart limb by limb. You know, you could actually grind people into the ground and be a woman. You know, I think that, again, I think it liberated generations of young women coming up, that you strip away all the rules that about femininity and how you're not supposed to do this and do that. And she was raw. You know, she could, her emotions were raw. You know, there was a time when she went at the line judge, you know, which everybody remembers, when she went over to her and she told her she would take this effing racket and shove it down her effing throat. And although I'm sure Serena would, you know, because she's just such a wonderful person off the court, I'm sure that's not one of her golden moments. But to me, it just defined her competitiveness and let, you know, competitors, in particular women, know that, hey, you know, you can be raw. You can be you can just be a vicious, take no prisoners competitor. That's what I loved about Serena, that she just took no prisoners. I love that about her.
And she is now preparing to walk away from the court, at least. And she doesn't like the word retirement, as we heard. She's calling it an evolution. Why do you think that resonates, particularly as a woman who was an athlete at the top of her game?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, to be honest, Kimberly, the thing that prompted me to write my essay for Anscape was just that. Two or three paragraphs in, when she said that she hated the R word. And that resonated to me because I'm terrified of that, terrified of the R word, retirement. I mean, when somebody even mentions to me, you know, I spent 34 years at the New York Times before moving to Anscape. And whenever somebody said, oh, you retired, I was like, no. Are you kidding me? I'm writing, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I totally vied with her that the R word, and particularly, you know, when you've been doing something, you know, since you've been like 8 or 9. And I think for somebody like Serena and athletes in general, I mean, they die 2 deaths. You know, the death that we all will have to face eventually. But the athlete dies that death as an athlete, which I think has to be horrible, because you've been doing something that's been your identity, you know, since you were 8 years old. It's been the source of compliments and to suddenly, and then for somebody like Serena or Michael Jordan or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, people who perform at that level have an additional curse, because you don't have the luxury of just being mediocre, just being okay. And I think, as Serena said in that clip, that the burden on her was to have to come out. We expected Serena every time out to win titles, you know, even up to this month. You know, I think there are people who will be cheering, pulling for her to pull a rabbit out of the hat and win that 24th tie, you know, Grand Slam and tie Margaret Court. So I just think that for somebody like Serena, who carries so many mantles on her shoulder, the mantle for black women, the mantle for women, there's so much. So I think that at some level, it's almost a relief to kind of, you know. So I just think that probably when she finally made that decision, it was probably like removing, you know, like 20 tons off her shoulders.
And this is probably, no. And I'm sure this is not the first time she's thought of this. I recall when she became pregnant years ago, there were a lot of people saying, oh, well, it's over now. Like, her body will change. Right. She's not going to be able to come back. And so she's already been juggling multiple roles. That transition, this evolution, so to speak, has already begun. It's been going on for years, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know, I'm sure, because we've been whispering, you know, it's easy for us sitting in the press box, and we've been talking about this for a couple of years, with the baby, the pregnancy, the tough pregnancy, with the complications. And we are thinking, well, is this it? And I think that, you know, I'm sure that she thought about it. She thought about it just as a mother, you know, every time she looked at, you know, at her baby's face. and said, I don't want to leave this girl. She's my world. I don't want to leave. But I think there is that the will of the competitor that kept drawing her forth. And also, just being a role model for her daughter, But I think that there comes a point, and I think this last night was it, when she just said, you know what? I just don't want to do this anymore. And maybe I can't do this anymore. And so I think that's the fascinating thing. I mean, we saw, a guy like Tom Brady. How long did he stay retired? Like 3 months. He said, you know what? Forget this. Tom, yeah. Take out the garbage. later for that tape. When are you going to take the kids to school? He said, you know what? I think by comparison, going to the NFL arena is not that bad. But I think that when, when you're a solo competitor and you're out there naked, and it's just you. You see Tiger Woods is still trying to get her to give it a shot. But I think you have to dig so deep when you're Serena Williams, deep in your soul, really do soul searching. You talked about how she talked to a therapist. And you make that hard, hard decision because I remember somebody told Brett Favre, the Hall of Fame quarterback, when he was going back and forth about retiring. And his agent told him, listen, man, be sure that this is what you want to do because there will be nothing in your career that will equal the roar of the crowd and the rush that you got as an NFL player. And I think that, Serena, and that beautiful essay she wrote, she said she loved that. She loved the roar of the crowd. And nothing she's going to do is going to equate that.
Yeah. Well, we are discussing the career of Serena Williams and how athletes evolve after their sports careers. When we come back, we'll hear from a former professional athlete about his experience and the challenges athletes face with retirement. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. We're talking about Serena Williams' retirement, or as she calls it, an evolution away from tennis. Williams' decision also brings to light the challenges for professional athletes who retire, many still young, and restart after being successful in sports their whole lives. With us this hour is Bill Roden. He is a columnist and editor at large for sports and pop culture site Andscape. Bill, I'd like to take just a few minutes to hear from Marcus Wheaton. He was a wide receiver in the NFL for 6 seasons.
Up until about three, four years ago, football was my life, right? Football was my focus. Football was my passion. It demanded and kind of held all of my time and focus.
Wheaton was 28 years old when he retired from football in 2019. He'd been drafted 6 years earlier by the Pittsburgh Steelers, where he had a locker next to quarterback Ben Roethlisberger.
I was next to Ben in the locker room, so his locker was next to mine. And payday, we get our checks. Everybody pops them open, look at your check. And, he would tease me sometimes. He didn't show many people, but because we kind of got close in the locker room being next to him, he would show me sometimes his checks. And it's very easy to get down on yourself, looking at numbers that big and not being grateful for the pretty large checks I was getting. When I started, I was getting maybe like $17,000, $19,000 a week. And then towards my later years in Chicago, like $109 biweekly. I did play football at Oregon State University. I wasn't thinking about anything in college but football. It sucks to say, I chose my major based off of the least time I could put into it and get by. And I had put all my eggs in one basket, just like a lot of these student athletes out there. Luckily, I made it after college. After my first year, I spent a lot of money on nothing, right? I got this huge signing bonus. I ended up purchasing a Jeep Wrangler and a computer and a whole lot of other stuff that a year later I didn't have. As an athlete that felt like I was unstoppable and this thing was never ending, no matter how many times people told me it would end, right, I felt I could work my way to making it last longer or as long as I wanted it to last. And up until that kind of 3, 4, 5 months leading up to my retirement, there was never any real thought about life after football. Me and my brother, I have an older brother who's 15 months older than me. He and I kind of stumbled across real estate and started growing from there. And by my last year, my sixth year with the Philadelphia Eagles, I had purchased 2 small apartment buildings at the start of that year. Right. And then once that started coming in, I started seeing how this could take care of my family, how this could be an opportunity for me to transition into that. I told my wife, if the injury bug continues to bite me this year, I'm going to hang it up. Right. So I gave her my word. And unfortunately, the injury bug stuck with me. And I kept my word, hung up my cleats and took off on the real estate. It was rough initially. I felt like, again, all my attention was on football, and I had a wife, I had kids, right? I had family and friends. And once football's gone, there's a lot of time that needs to be occupied. I took that focus and drive and energy that I had in football, and I put it initially into my wife and kids, and it made me happy. Even though I wasn't getting the love outside of the house like I was when I was playing football, I had the love at the house, in the house, with the family and the wife and kids. That initially helped me transition and find, right, helped me get comfortable and relax and be able to take my time to find a new passion. And that passion was found in real estate. Once I found real estate and what it could do for me and my family, started to enjoy it, started to really enjoy it, started to wake up looking forward to it, then I knew I found what was for me. I have more time with the family, right? I have more time at home with the kids. I get to drop them off, pick them up from school, get to spend time and go on dates and things like that with my wife when I want to. I still enjoy work, right? I still make, I would say, really good money. Life is better for me. Life is a lot better outside of football.
That's Marcus Wheaton, former NFL wide receiver who now works in real estate. And joining us now is Kenza Gunter. She's a clinical and sports psychologist and the director of the NBA and WNBA Mind Health. Kenza, it's great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Kimberly. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So we frame this show talking about the evolution of Serena Williams when she steps off the court for the last time. But for most athletes, they don't have the resources or the status that Serena Williams does have in making that transition. It seems that Marcus's story is one of the exceptions to what a lot of athletes, particularly those in the NFL, face. Kenza?
Certainly, yes, absolutely. I mean, certainly I think that process of transitioning out of competitive play is something that all athletes experience, regardless of their level of competition and play. But as you said, it's helping and surrounding them with resources as they make that transition that becomes really important. When you say the word retirement, it can sound like a singular event. But as we just heard, it truly is a process. And I think one of the things we also have to be mindful of is it's important to start that process before they reach the point of transition in order to create a foundation where they have skills and they may be able to explore interests. But for many, it's hard to think about retiring and transitioning when I'm just starting or when I'm just entering into this professional space. And so I think you're absolutely right. We cannot treat transition as if it's a singular event that the individual has to endure by themselves, but really surround them with resources and support, not only at the moment of the change, but prior to, so that they will have some foundation to rest on as they make that transition.
And Bill, I know a lot of people will hear, you know, an athlete retiring maybe earlier than expected due to an injury or being cut and having a difficult time out of that transition mentally and financially and think, oh, okay, you were getting paid a ton of money. How are you having those problems? But particularly for athletes, those who did not come from money or those who have potential specific cultural considerations, it can be a very rude awakening, Bill. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great to be on with Dr. Gunter because she does represent, I think, sort of an enlightenment in the athletic industry, because there was a time when we didn't really pay attention to life after a career for athletes. And a lot of people ran into severe emotional problems. But specifically, it was interesting listening to the athlete who was on. That's a happy, you know, his was a happy ending. You know, it was a happy ending. But for a lot of people, you know, you remember when he was talking about getting those big checks, you know, week after week or biweekly. And a lot of people, particularly if like most of us, you've not been taught about money when you were young, and you think that you spend a lot of your career not investing and just sort of, you know, living for the next check and buying stuff for everybody you've ever wanted to pay back, from your mother, your boys, your sisters, or you know, whatever. And then when you retire and you realize that this money stream has come to an end, you find yourself coming up short. And you're like, oh, my God. So not only are you not prepared for it psychologically, but you're not prepared for it financially either. And I think that, you know, people like Dr. Gunter has helped a generation of young athletes become smarter. You know, like the athlete who was on the show, you know, who you spoke to, talked about getting into real estate. And I think one of the key things he said was, he woke up looking forward to it, you know, and I think that's the big thing, is finding something, and Serena talked about this, finding something that has been such a defining part of not just your life, but at the core of who you are, and suddenly giving that up and trying to replace that with something, maybe with, you know, with your family, you know, with something else. So, yeah, I think that thankfully, professional leagues have realized that they owe it to the people who come through those doors, not just to squeeze everything they can out of them physically, but help to prepare them for life after football. And one last thing I'll say is I think that the broadcast booth for a lot of it has been a tremendous saving grace for a lot of athletes, not you know, for a good number of athletes, to be able to be on television, to get the same type of acclaim and you know, name and face visibility, and stay close to the game. So we've evolved, but still, man, it is such a tough transition.
Kenza, I want to get to what is so specifically difficult for athletes to make that transition into retirement or to evolve into the next stage of life. I'm sure there are listeners who have changed careers. I was a litigator, and I am technically a retired attorney, according to the Massachusetts bar. I retired in my 20s from that career. But what is it different about athletes that makes this transition so perilous?
I think there are a couple of factors for us to consider. One is, usually for athletes who compete at the elite level, they started participation so early in their lives. And we're literally talking about ages 3, 4, 5, 6. And so their identity really has been shaped throughout their entire life around their participation in sport. They gain their confidence from sport, their accomplishments, their validation from others. Others start to define them in relation to their sport, and not just their sport, but their success. in their sport, right? So they can develop this performance-based identity at a very young age, and everything in your life, and for many of the athletes, everything in their family's life can come to revolve around this sport. I think that is a slightly different experience for the athlete than maybe for someone else who is committed to a different endeavor. I think the other thing that we see is that strong athletic identity that goes along with that early start for participation. It is the idea that, again, how they see themselves and how they are defined in the world is intimately connected to their performance. So when you think about an athlete who is now reaching the point of preparing to step away from the very thing that not only has been used to define them, but that they may have used to define themselves, you can see why removing that may create a tremendous void. And again, it's not that they won't be able to fill that void with other things moving forward. But we can't ignore that the process of letting go in order to grab onto something new, in that in between, there can be a lot of difficulty, challenge. In the world of sports psychology, we sometimes liken it to a grief and loss process, right? Mm. The process of letting go of this sport, of this activity, and it's not just a sport for them, it's their passion. It really is. They make sacrifices for this endeavor. It's a really integral part of their lives. But we've described it as a grief and loss process. Well, they actually have to grieve the process of letting go of their sport in order to hopefully grab on to something new in their future. And that's where I think the evolution lives. But before they get to the evolution, for many, there is a grieving process involved in letting go.
And on that issue of identity, Marcus Wheaton, who we heard from earlier, he shared with us that when he was transitioning out of his sports career, something that helped him with his identity shift was his name.
Once I did retire, I came back home. So a lot of people at home, my middle name is Levante. I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. And a lot of my friends called me Tay because my dad's name is Marcus. Right. So when I came home, I was Tay, and playing football at Pittsburgh or at Oregon State or in Philly or in Chicago, I was Marcus Wheaton. Coming back home, it was I came home to being Tay.
So, Bill, talk about that and the point that Kenzo is making about identity, how you have to forge one for yourself and Tay taking this approach.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's sort of it. Whether it's Marcus or Tom Brady, any of these people, you know, again, you've been doing something since you were 4 or 5 years old, and that becomes your identity. And also, I think, too, for a lot of particularly African-American athletes, when you look into the sociology and the aspect of race relations, how oftentimes, you know, black people are devalued and marginalized. And then when you do this one thing you do well, you go to University of Alabama, Georgia, you know, and all of a sudden all these white people are showering you with praise, you know, and attention and all this sort of positive reinforcement that otherwise you see a lot of folks not getting. And then all of a sudden, that's cut off. You stop being the guy who could run fast and jump high, and all these folks who normally wouldn't care about you care about. Now all of a sudden, you die this athletic death, and that goes away as well. So I think I sometimes think of the athletic life and death as, you go to pieces when you quote unquote retire. You go to pieces, and now it's up to you to put yourself together again with what's left and come up with a whole new identity. And it's not, again, it's not an easy thing, but the reality is that you've got to do it. For example, you mentioned you were a prosecutor. Well, I mean, you were an attorney. Well, mm-hmm. Okay, you could, if you want to, you could still be an attorney. I mean, you could still, if you want to, you decide to get into this business.
Right.
But for an athlete, the reality is that, you know, whether it's through injury or age, or the team making the decision that they no longer want you, that's it. There's nothing you could do about that. And I think that could be really, be very devastating.
Kenza, how do some athletes do it? How are some successful in their post-athletic career? I'm thinking of the Michael Jordans or the Magic Johnsons. What did they do right?
Right. I think they had a strong support system, likely that was around them to help them when they reached that point of transition. But I also think it's something that I mentioned earlier. They may have started thinking about the transition before they reached the point of transition. So I think about some of our current athletes. I think about Candace Parker and how she has the job with TNT. I think about Jasmine Thomas, who was recently on a broadcast for one of the WNBA playoff games. I think about athletes who are exploring other interests while they are playing. So that may allow them to start thinking through, what am I interested in? What else is a part of my identity beyond simply being on the court or the field? And I think that really helpful is to explore then before they get to the point of transition.
We're talking about how athletes pursue greatness after sports. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. Today, we're talking about the pending retirement of Serena Williams and how athletes evolve away from their sports after their retirement. That's how Serena Williams described her plans to retire in her recent announcement essay in Vogue magazine. She called it an evolution. We're joined by Bill Roden. He is columnist and editor at large for sports and pop culture site Anscape. And we're also joined by clinical and sports psychologist Kenza Gunther. She is director of the NBA and WNBA Mind Health. So I want to talk about Serena Williams again. She cited family as the primary reason she is stepping away from tennis. Here she is again on the Archetypes podcast with Meghan Markle talking about that.
You know, obviously I'm retiring professionally, but it's also an evolution. I'm doing more business things, and I really want to expand my family. And, you know, I've been putting it off for so long. And as a woman, there's only so long you can put that off. And, you know, other men out there can continue to play.
So Kenza Gunter, can you talk about this added factor of giving birth that women have in the sports world? They have to wrestle with when it comes to deciding when to step off the court or step off the field.
100%. There are physiological realities that no one can escape and no one can train to prolong, right? And as we hear Serena talking, we can also think about Allyson Felix and the way in which childbirth and pregnancy, it impacts the body, and their bodies are the vehicles that are allowing them to do their sport. So certainly thinking about someone who has interests in having a family, having children, expanding their family, as Serena talked about, there comes a point when unfortunately a decision has to be made because time doesn't last forever, and their opportunity to do that, particularly if they want to give birth to children themselves, there's a limited time that they have. And so that certainly is an added consideration and an added level that goes into thinking about the experience and the career path of female identified athletes. And certainly I don't want to ignore the fact that we have male identified athletes who certainly are parents and engage in fatherhood and they want to spend time there as well. But there's a physical demand that exists for the female identified athlete who carries a child to term that you just can't escape. And thinking about how to navigate and make decisions around two passions right? Because Serena is extremely passionate about tennis. She said that and you heard that. She's also extremely passionate about her family and expanding her family. And so making the decision between which passion to pursue can be a really challenging and seemingly unfair decision that female athletes have to make.
And Kenza, this is on top of the other double standards that women in sports already have to endure. There is usually a very stark pay discrepancy in the world of tennis in itself. There is always the debate as to whether male tennis players are just better than women tennis players.
Sure.
That's something that even Serena Williams has had to deal with when people label, you know, try to have their discussions about who is the GOAT. Talk about that compounded effect, especially when it comes to deciding when that career ends.
I mean, you just named it, certainly thinking about some of the pay inequities and also thinking about, I think for women and Black women in particular, the way in which their bodies are judged and criticized and viewed if they are strong and seemingly, if they have a physique that is seemingly not like the femininity standards that may exist in the majority culture in the United States. And all of these different factors that they have to hear about and wrestle with as they're just trying to perform and be excellent, right? And so I think one of the things that I really value about Serena is that throughout her career, she has been excellent. She has been the GOAT. She has been dominant, but she also has not allowed her to ignore or reduce her humanity. She has constantly reminded us of the fact that there is a person that lives within that performer. And I think highlighting some of those very real challenges of pay inequity, of having to bear children and still come back and perform. We have women in the WNBA this year who had children and were back on the court within 5 months, within 3 months. I mean, it's unreal to think about what it must take to do that. And yet, it's more than a thought for these women. It's the lives that they lead. And so certainly thinking about how we support and how we recognize those differences and not just provide generic support, but provide support that is specific to those experiences. Because in addition to the positives that may come from having children and expanding your family, there's also the potential for things like postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. And so again, when we think about support, it's not just support for the moment or for the event that we may see, but it's support for the lived experience that goes along with managing all of those additional burdens.
And Bill, I want to talk a bit about the role the media plays here, because it certainly does. It must be difficult for an athlete to move, even if there is a good transition, a new vocation for them to transition into. If they're not still getting that attention from folks like you, that must be difficult. And also the way that folks in the media portray these transitions is important. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think we play a major role. And I just want to say, you know, Dr. Gunther brings up such great points. And to me, it underlines the significance of Serena and Venus Williams, and that a lot of things she mentioned about the double burden of women having to compete, childbearing. I mean, this is something that we probably would not even focus on. You have a male-dominated media, and they bring up issues that we probably wouldn't even have dealt with. And, you know, the pay inequity that Venus championed, and then Serena talking very openly about the burden of, you know, being a woman, a mother, a competitor. And I think these are things that they forced us to deal with because of their championship platform, and it's something that we otherwise would not deal with. And then to your specific point, we're very much in the media about the here and now, you know, the here and now, and particularly in athletics, when it's here and now. And the moment that you retire, you become part of the past. And I think that I don't know if it's wrong, but that's just the nature of the media, and that's the nature of sports. It's just here and now. But I do think it's the responsibility of, like, again, sports teams, sports leagues, to make sure that there's a whole another psychological aspect that's dealt with, because there's nothing could duplicate the arena, you know, and it's helping athletes find, beginning in college, this other life that's going to come. And I don't know if that's our role in the media to do that. But mm-hmm. I think that when you've got champions and you've got people like a Serena Williams, like a Venus Williams, who, by the way, I was just thinking about that. I think this, I'm kind of veering off a little bit, but interestingly, you know, Venus is the older sister, and she hasn't decided she wants to jump into that retirement pool, you know, because it is very, very, very daunting. But, you know, again, to get to your specific question, athletics is very much the here and now. And once mm-hmm. you step off of that, you know, you've got to deal with a new life. And I think this generation, these last two generations of athletes, are much more prepared to do that because they've seen older athletes go through this. And I think, you know, when you see a guy like Marcus Wheaton, everything he said about getting into a new business, that's because he's seen one or two generations of athletes not be prepared. So I think that we're kind of headed in a good direction regarding, yeah. you know, transition and evolution, whatever you want to call it, transition, evolution. But at the end of the day, right. it's retirement.
Right. So, Kenza, you brought up the fact that success also often depends on what the athletes do during their career before that transition point arrives. We'll get to professionally the things that Serena has been doing to set herself up. But I also want to talk about what she did for herself and other athletes while still playing, particularly when it comes to mental health and other challenges that athletes face. She spoke very openly about her postpartum depression, for example, which is something that was new, relatively new in the world of sports. And I think that that helped open the door for people like Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles to talk about some of the things they were experiencing and their right now in real time as athletes. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that part of Serena Williams's legacy.
I mean, I think it's an incredible legacy, and I am inspired by her courage and vulnerability to talk about those things in the public domain, because historically within the world of sport, we did not talk about mental health at all. If you did, there were labels that might be placed on you. You're weak, you can't handle it. And so I think what Serena did by sharing her very real lived experience was to help to humanize athletes. And I think that's a really big point that cannot be understated, is humanizing this conversation about mental health. When we have athletes who are at the top of their game, they are elite, right? Serena talking about her postpartum depression did not take away from the fact that she was still elite and dominant on the court. But I think what it did was force all of us to see that there is, again, a person within that performer. And it's not, and even if we can honor and praise and be in awe of the performance, we also have to respect the humanity and the dignity of the person. And I think her sharing her journey, her mental health journey, certainly opened the door for others. And as more athletes have talked about that, I think, again, it has allowed us to see, even though they are extraordinary and may appear to be superhuman in their respective fields of play, they are also dealing with very real life challenges and difficulties. And we can't ignore that. You know, I think we have a tendency to just create a gloss and see them as invincible, right? And to see them as individuals who do not experience the day-to-day challenges of life. But I think the gift that she has given to other athletes and to all of us is to humanize the conversation and to understand that it's not so much that a person becomes great and excellent because they don't have challenges or adversity, but it is the ability to navigate those challenges and adversity that is a part of what allows her to be great and excellent, right? And I think that is a message that all of us can take, is life is going to happen. We may face moments and situations that are stressful. Our mental health may be tested. We may even be one of the five adults in the United States that have a diagnosable mental health condition. That does not mean that we cannot reach high levels of success, that we cannot be productive, that we cannot have meaningful connections and be elite in whatever space we occupy. It does mean that it's important for us to be intentional about addressing those concerns when they arise. And as Serena has talked about her family being integral, and she's talked about attending therapy and doing things to make sure that she as a person is okay, which allows her as the performer to shine in the ways that we're used to her shining. But I think that's a huge legacy. And I'm grateful as someone in the mental health profession, I'm grateful to her and all athletes who talk about their experiences, because again, I think it goes a long way towards understanding health and performance are connected, and we cannot ignore the person of the athlete when we're talking about any aspect of their athletic journey.
And Bill, Serena also spent a good deal of time forecasting what might be next for her and launching her fashion line and being a venture capitalist and being an activist and being very present outside of the court already. Talk about how that is going to help this evolution.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and she's talked about that for a while. Serena and both of the sisters, which I think that the story of the Williams sisters probably is one of the great stories in American sports history. But I think one of the things they pride themselves on is being well-rounded. You know, she's had a number of interests for a few years, and I think it just got to the point where you look at the balance of all these competing interests, and then the idea of wanting to be, you know, a full-time mom. And then, you know, saying, you know what, I can't do all this and still do what it takes to, operate at this championship level. And I think the good news is that all these other ventures won out. And I'm really excited. I'm just excited to see the next chapters of her life, because there's so many things. I mean, even in terms of her venture capital business, I think has been such a great example for a lot of young Black women and women entrepreneurs. She's talked about how it's important for women to do business with other women, you know, and there's just so many tremendous messages that the platform that she has. Has provided inspiration for us. So I just can't say enough about all the great things that she has done, not only on the court, but particularly mm-hmm. off the court. How she's conducted herself, how she's been an advocate for so many causes. I just think that they're phenomenal. I think there should be statues of both her and her sister at every in France, in Australia, in New York. I think they should build statues. I think there should be statues of them for what they've done.
Kenza,
I just think it's amazing.
Yeah, Kenza, just in the minute or so we have left, what do you think lies ahead for Serena Williams?
You know, I think she's going to blaze more trails in the same way that she has already done. So I think she is, it's beautiful to see her even define this next phase of her life on her own terms, right? And I think what we'll see is the passion, the commitment, the dedication to excellence that we have become so accustomed to seeing on the court. My guess is that that won't change, because that's who she is. We'll just see it manifesting in different aspects of a life that she is going to create for herself. And again, I just applaud her for defining this moment in the way that she has defined so many other moments on her own terms. And that's not to say that it won't be without challenge, but it will be according to the terms that she sets.
Kenza Gunter is a clinical and sports psychologist and director of the NBA and WNBA Mind Health. Kenza, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Bill Roden is a columnist and editor at large for sports and culture site Anscape. Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.